This episode is brought to you by the Michigan Cherry Committee. Learn about the wonderfully tart Montmorency cherry at choosecherries.com.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni, I'm the host, and this is April 14th, Tuesday, 2020. Yes, we're in the middle of the COVID crisis, we're doing remote recordings, and today we're going somewhere, another place, another time. It's only in Oxford, Connecticut, it's called OEC Brewing, and we last went there in 2015. We've got Ben Neidhart on and some of the crew from Be United, and we're going to be talking about that old style of beer and the special place that we all want to be. So let's go around the room and we're going to introduce everyone. I'll say your name and then you say who you are. So let's start with Ben.
Hi, I'm Ben. I'm the owner of OEC Brewing and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Ben. Michael?
My name is Michael Polensky. I work for Be United International, the importing company that's kind of a sister company to OEC Brewing and managing the New York City and New Jersey and Alabama markets.
That's great. George?
Hey, Jimmy. How you doing? I'm George. I also work for Be United. I am also working in New York City with Michael Opolensky.
Great. And Gavin?
Hey, guys. Gavin from Beer Table, but more importantly today, just a big fan of what they're doing at OEC and Be United.
So let's go back to the beginning. So, Ben, when you go to OEC, it's in Oxford, Connecticut. It's a beautiful place. It is a little farm action. You're growing, you know, products and fruits. You've got a traditional brewery. Let's tell us about your original inspiration and, you know, what it means to you. There's mysticism there. There's an ancient order of eccentric boilers.
Yeah, so when we first started, I drew a lot of inspiration from my childhood days. And I used to really like playing with knights, like, you know, the Lego knights and all that. And so, like, when you look at knights and from that time, there's also a lot of references to alchemy and mysticism and so forth. And that kind of relates to the times back then when they're brewing, because in reality, they didn't know what was causing the beer to ferment or what was even making beer. They would just put it in open vats and they would put it next to other vats that are so-called fermenting. They didn't even know what fermentation was, so they called it boiling. So they put a pot next to another pot so it could learn how to boil. And that kind of from all those things that we kind of drew the inspiration for what later became OEC.
That's great. So, you know, some of those on your website, it references pre-Reinheitsgebot, pre-industrial brewing. So what is that? What are technologies that you use? You know, what era are you trying to capture?
I mean, the first technology we use is really open fermentation. Then we do a lot of things in wood. We try to do things in different materials besides wood, besides just stainless steel like amphora, stone like granite, things of that nature.
Yeah, and I know you guys have made some outstanding beers. So some of them to me, when I was there in 2015, I got a, it must have been a growler filled Berliner Weiss that was capped tightly. And literally a year later, a national BJCP judge who I really respect, she pulled it out of our walk-in at Jimmy's number 43, and she thought it was still tasting perfect. So maybe Michael or George, tell us a little bit more about why OEC beers are so good. You're able to have vintage beers. Just give us from Be United's perspective, give us some backstory on this brewery.
Yeah, yeah. Hi, how's it going? Obviously, Ben can really say it the best, but there are obviously few breweries still left in the world that, you know, use all of these old, very historic methods to make beer as it once was. And that's really amazing because obviously Ben and the team are trying to capture a part of this history and keep it going in many ways. And, you know, a lot of these flavors that they create there are sort of forgotten and things that, again, existed long ago, but no longer do today.
And Gavin, you know, at Beer Table, you guys have had a lot of OEC beers. What are a couple of favorites that you want to tell our listeners about?
I mean, most recently, we've been tearing through the Kolsch Lagers before we had to close our doors due to COVID. But I think one of the most fun things that we did with OEC was back in, I think it was the Monday before Thanksgiving, we had Michael and George in the shop doing the premiere of Canned Cool Ship Lager, and it was just madness. Everybody was falling in love with it.
Yeah, and guys, how is that working for you guys at Be United? You know, what other brands do you have in cans? Because cans is kind of saving some of the industry right now. Michael?
Yeah, Jimmy. Great question. So at Be United, we have this a system for importing a lot of our beers that go ultimately into kegs using these bulk tank container units, basically shipping the beers via these large tanks that were a bit like modified from a producer that makes milk tanks in the UK. And these tanks go to the breweries. We fill them up at the breweries. They travel back over the ocean to us, both temperature and pressure controlled. When we originally started this system, the liquid that came in would really just be bound to either go into barrels or into kegs. And it was, I want to say about 2 years, but Ben can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, that we installed a canning line. And since then, we've slowly started to roll out canned products. Now, though, that COVID has come upon us and off-premise seems to be a lot lighter, we're actually starting to move a lot of the liquids that were coming to us anyway via tank and via our tank containers into can package. So we're launching shortly the Exschlenkele Mürzen, which is the draft version unfiltered that's going to be going into cans. That should be due state in the States maybe in the next 3 weeks. We just received a bunch of beers from Klosterbrauerei Etal in Germany. A new Mürzen, in fact, that we're launching that went into cans. Their Curator, their Doppelbock, which we also receive in the tank container, it's also going into cans. Some other beers from Leipzig, from the Bayerischer Bahnhof. We're going to be launching some new Hitachino beers in cans just to try to support this new like market that's very off-premise focused for the time being, what with the pandemic about.
Yeah, no, it's amazing seeing everyone rally. So Ben, just tell us about your system. So when you built this little brewery, what system did you put in? Because I know you're inspired by 19th century technologies.
Yeah, so of course we put in a very interesting system. So in some senses, it's very modern because you look up at it and in the middle is like this DJ booth with a computer. But on the other hand, it's very old school. So we don't even have a whirlpool. So we have to send everything going through the cool ship, which is not standard procedure at all. The main brew house is a two vessel system, like a continental German system, where you mash into the same kettle that you boil in, and then you move the wort over into the lauter tun to lauter back into the brew kettle. Because of that, it means that we have to move our mash a lot, so we can do lots of complex mashes, such as decoctions, turbid mashes for kind of lambic style beers and so forth. And then after the boil, since we have no choice and we don't have a whirlpool, we have to send everything through the cool ship. Even the clean beers, they sit in the cool ship for about an hour to an hour and a half. And then finally, our cooling system is this open kind of counter. It's called a Boudelet chiller. It's an open counterflow cooler. So it comes up and the beer cascades down the outside. And the cold water is on the inside and you recollect it as it heats up for the following day for brewing. But that's all kind of stuff that hasn't been in use for over 100 years. When we asked the Kaspar Schultz, who made the brew house originally, to make a Boudelet chiller, they said they found plans and they're like, we haven't built one of these in 100 years.
Jimmy, this is Gavin. If you haven't seen a Boudelet chiller in action, it's really one of the prettiest things in beer.
Tell me in your words, Gavin.
If you imagine a kind of a broad ladder of pipework that the beer just really smoothly cascades over, it ripples in a just like a gorgeous way. But if Ben, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if you run just water through it, the viscosity isn't high enough that it would just make an absolute mess.
Yeah, that's why I was laughing a second ago, because I was going to say when you clean it, it looks terrible. The liquid goes everywhere because the caustic that you clean it with has no viscosity to it. So it's spraying all over the place. And you look at it and you're like, how can this thing ever work? And then the wart slowly comes down. It then forms these beautiful like little rings as it cascades down. It's really interesting.
So, Ben, when you were planning the brewery, how did you learn about the system? Did you train at any breweries in Germany? Was there anyone coaching you on how to make this?
So I'd worked at a couple breweries in Europe prior to starting OEC. Just, you know, for short periods of time. I spent a little bit of time with Eschlenkerle in Bamberg. I'd spent some time at BFM in Switzerland. And then I actually spent a couple of weeks, which was a lot of fun, at our cider producer, DuPont, in Normandy. But then when it came down to building the brew house, we asked a lot of our good breweries for their opinions and suggestions. And it was kind of an amalgamation of tips from a lot of different brewers, including like the Dole in Belgium, BFM in Switzerland, Urige from Germany had some contribution to it. So we took a lot of input and kind of built a system based on that. And then we learned to brew with it.
That's great. And what were the first beers that you made? Like I said, I've had the Berliner Weiss way back when. What were some of the first beers you made?
Yeah, Exilis is the Berliner Weiss. It's one of the first we made. Tempest, which is like an old world Saison. Our inspiration was from back in the day when they used to blend Saisons with old lambic barrels they had. And then the other one that we still also have around from back then is Phantasma, which is, it's a strong sour porter.
That's great. Hey, George, so tell us more about OEC, because I know that it's a special place and it's really a unique part of what Be United's done.
Yeah, no, and, you know, Michael and I obviously love now that we can sell more OEC in the New York market, and we're able to get it out a bit more, which is great. I mean, obviously in the early days, you know, the production was pretty small and limited, and it still is. But it's nice to bring, you know, all of these very historically influenced beers to the market. And I feel like Ben and the team are doing things that not a lot of people are doing, where they're focusing on these like more historic mashing regimes and older grains that have sort of fallen out of favor, as well as Ben mentioned, you know, older types of material for aging beer, like the Amphora, the Solera system, and the granite fermenters as well. So it offers something that's truly unique, which is, you know, these days, pretty amazing.
I mean, what I've always liked about your beers, Ben, is that it's not extreme beer. It's actually really good beer. And how much of that, I want you to talk more. You got to talk more, Ben.
Yeah. So, you know, we make a lot of sour beers, and that's one of the things we're very well known for. And When dealing with sourness in beer, I very much look at it similar to how I look at spiciness in food. I grew up in Germany, and it took me about 30 years till I started enjoying spicy food to a certain degree. And now I love it. I like really spicy Indian food. I love Thai food and all those things. But my feeling with really spicy food is that I can handle extremely spicy food, but the spicier it gets, the more flavor it must have to balance out the spice. And so I look at sourness the same way. You can have a lot of sourness, but the point isn't just to have sourness in beer. You need to have that balance by different flavor profiles as well. And then in terms of the lagers that we do, the open fermented lagers, I like my lagers on the drier side, but I also like them not purely based on hop profile. So it also needs to have a nice bit of malt body to it.
That's great. Gavin, did you go to OEC today? Because you're staying in Connecticut right now.
I am, yeah. I was actually just at OEC around 3 o'clock this afternoon, and I'm enjoying an ether with Hallertau Blanc and Laurel right now that's fantastic. And it's really a testament to what Ben was just saying about sour, not just for sour's sake, but as an aspect in the kind of kaleidoscope of flavors that are going on.
So, Ben, what's the ester?
The ester?
The beer, your beer called Esther.
Oh, the ether.
Ether, excuse me.
Ether's actually, we've done it now for, I think, the third time. This is the first time we actually just sent some cans out to distribution in Connecticut. But we call it a dry hop sour ale. It's kind of a pale ale base with a little bit of wheat that isn't hopped too highly in the boil. I think we only end up with about 3 IBU. We ferment it with some of our house yeasts. And then we dry hop it the first time right before it goes into barrels. So it'll finish primary fermentation. We'll dry hop it. In this case, we did it with Laurel and Halotel Blanc. Then we'll let it go in barrels for anywhere from 3 to 6 months. And because of its the fresh dry hopping, it kind of slows down the bacteria activity, but also lets a lot of the wild yeast play. So it creates a lot of really interesting tropical notes from the Brettanomyces. And then after 3 or 4 months or so, it starts to pick up a bit of tartness as well. Then we pull it back out of the barrels. We dry hop it one more time prior to packaging.
Wow. And when did you, because you grew up in a beer import family. When did you decide that you wanted to have your own brewery?
We talked about it for a while. When we moved up to the building here in 2009 for the import company, we talked about eventually doing it. So we planned for about 3 years and then finally pulled the trigger. And it took about 5 years till everything was built and came together. And we opened in 2014.
And Gavin, you were just there today. So what's it like? So right now, OEC Brewing, it's just a to-go brewery. Did you drive up? Did you go in? Did you peruse the food that's available? Tell us your experience today.
Yeah, my girlfriend and I drove up this afternoon. We had to run some errands kind of just north of where she lives in Hampden. And I thought it was a good opportunity to stock up for myself and for the podcast. It's not like the last time I visited. There's lots of cases arranged, ready to go out. I think your staff was getting ready to do some deliveries this week, and it was an artful pivot from the on-premise days.
Yeah, and Ben, so you've responded to the crisis well. You're open 7 days a week, but you also have food. There's something about food for people that need it.
Yeah, so that was, I have to give all the credit to my wife on that. That was her idea. Every once in a while go to Restaurant Depot because we're open, usually Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays for on-premise and have some food options. Now, she realized, we could just buy a whole bunch of these groceries and make them available. So she's buying a weekly selection of fresh produce to go, and people, as they come and pick up items, are free to take whatever they need, no charge. And we also have some remaining supply of toilet paper that we're trying to give people who don't have any.
You're giving away toilet paper for free?
Yep.
It was a friend of mine. He sent an email. He was joking, but it's true. In New York City, in so many of the stores, there's no toilet paper, but there's paper towels and tissues. So go figure, America. Take me away to OEC because it's a special place. So when I was there, even 5 years ago, you guys have orchards and you have things growing. What are you doing with, tell us what you're growing and then what you're doing with that product in your beer.
Yeah, so we have a couple different things. Like you said, we have an orchard. Then we have 3 different greenhouses. And then we have a vineyard. So in our orchard, we have a number of peach trees. We have lots of raspberries, red and white. We have strawberries. Then in the greenhouses is where all our citrus fruits are. We have a whole variety of different ones, anything from calamondine to sour oranges to limes to Meyer lemons. We just built a new greenhouse last year, so we have some experimental varieties on different things that we hope are going to make it there. We have some guava plants and so forth, things like that. And in the vineyard, we do different types of American grapes, anything from whites to reds.
And what are some beers that you're using the fruits in?
Our most famous fruited line is Experimentalis, which is only made from fruit that we grow on our own property. So the most recent one we packaged, but we weren't able to release it yet because of the pandemic, is with our red and white raspberries. We do a lot of citrus-based ones. One of my favorite is the Meyer Lemon one that we usually do aged in gin barrel. The combination of the citrus character from the Meyer Lemons and the gin barrel is really, really nice. Then we do some blends or international blends where some of the beer comes from some of our brewers abroad, and we blend it with some of our beers that have fruit and some of their beers that have fruit. And those come under various names. The most famous line is probably the Oodalisk line that uses Hansen's fruited lambic and some of our fruited beer.
That sounds great. Hey, Michael, tell us a really great memory you have of spending time at OEC at the B United compound.
Well, I mean, like my time at it's. So the OEC is sort of located at the B United warehouse. So the brewery is sort of in one section, and surrounding you are these forests. It's very bucolic. The orchards that Ben just described are sort of surrounding the warehouse, the greenhouses and back. I guess like one of my favorite recent memories is we recently started a, and this is like a long-term project, so nothing that's going to get released this year or probably even next year. But working on a vinegar project in back that was inspired from Italian style balsamic vinegars from Modena. So on this particular day, we were doing that incalza, which is the process where after a hot summer, the vinegar is transferred from the larger barrels into the smaller barrel, and then that from that smaller barrel into the next smaller barrel, in order to then fill the biggest barrel, which will then have the empty space with new liquid for it to then become vinegar. So this day we were tasting the vinegar from the first year's acidification process and doing some transfer. It was a lovely fall day, a little crisp in the air. We were like siphoning vinegar from these barrels and tasting through a lot of different vinegars. It was a lovely time. And this is like a portion, a little side project, let's say, of what OEC is doing. So that in particular was a nice
memory. Great. And George, you have a special memory of being at OEC?
Ooh, Jimmy, you put me on the spot here. No, you know, I, as Michael mentioned, you know, we are up at OEC quite a lot. So, you know, I remember a pretty fantastic day, actually very early in my time at B United, when OEC sort of lent their brewing system to a visiting brewer named Pekka Karjainen. And he is famous for his sati. He was sort of one of the earliest sati brewers. Not the earliest sati brewer, sorry. He has kept it alive, really. And this tradition of sati brewing is so historic. And he was one of few people that really kept it going. So he came to Oxford, Connecticut, and brewed on OEC system his famous sati. And it was a really incredible day because, of course, he was there, but also there was just a massive blizzard. So we were sort of stuck inside the OEC brew house as Pekka was brewing his sati, and it was a pretty incredible day.
I remember that you had invited a whole number of retail accounts and beer bar buyers, and we couldn't go because of the storm. But we did a show with Pekka, and that's a whole other show. But we've had some really great experiences with you guys. Gavin, you know, I'm thinking about what I want to drink. So what haul did you get from OEC today? I want to hear everything.
So we got the dry hopped ether, which I'm drinking right now, as well as the Cool Ship Lager, the black lager that I'm looking forward to cracking into in a few minutes. Haven't had a chance to try that one yet. I also, from B United, grabbed some of the Fuchshofmust German cider.
That sounds great. So let's talk about the Cool Ship Lager. You know, Jeff Alworth, Brivana up in Portland, was just saying that because so many breweries are going to be leaving beer in tanks for a while with the COVID crisis, he feels like it's going to be a lagerization of beer in America. But that's been going on, that people have a taste for lager. And from when I asked around some of the Manhattan beer bars that I know, like Carmine Street Beers, they were like, man, we've had the Cool Ship Lager in, or Good Beer NYC on 9th Street said, we had it on draft, we were serving it in growlers. So that's been out there. What's the energy behind that? Is this going to be a product that you're going to make more of? Tell us more about the Cool Ship Lager. Who wants to start with that?
I can start with that if you want me to. It's definitely something we're working on to produce more of. We're actually just finishing up a renovation where we added capacity so we could do Cool Ship Lager. Cool Ship Lager is the first beer that OEC has consistently sent to distribution so far for package. So it's a 4-pack can, 16-ounce cans. And we have three different varieties of it right now. We have the regular, the Cool Ship Lager, which is kind of we call it a Czech-style blonde lager. We use Slovenian hops and some German hops. We make another version of it called Cool Ship Lager Americana that uses only American-style hops. And then, like Gavin picked up today, the Cool Ship Black, or Cool Ship Lager Black, which is a black-style lager.
That's great. We're going to take a short break in a minute. But first, I want everyone to tell me what beer they're drinking right now. So I'm drinking, I went to Good Beer on 9th Street, and he said, oh, I had the OEC, the Cool Ship Lager, but not, I don't have any more. So I got a Grim, from Grim, Invisible Touch Lager, which is drinking nice. Michael, what are you drinking?
I just cracked open a can of Cool Ship Lager Americana.
Good for you. George, what are you drinking?
Well, I went really big and pulled out of my cellar a bottle of OEC Odorless Kerasys from 2016.
Great. And Gavin, you told us, but tell us again what you're drinking.
I was drinking the Ether, and I'm just about to take my first couple sips of the Cool Ship Black.
Great. And Ben, what are you drinking right now?
I'm actually drinking a Cool Ship Lager regular at the moment.
That sounds great. I'll tell you, so right now we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a minute on Beer Sessions Radio.
This episode is brought to you by the Michigan Cherry Committee. A cherry isn't just a cherry. When it comes to tart cherries, the wonderfully U.S.-grown Montmorency tart cherry variety is the cherry with more. They're available year-round, dried, frozen, canned, juice, and concentrate. U.S. Montmorency tart cherries are also one of America's superfruit, which means they're good for you. Tart cherries contain many antioxidants and beneficial phytonutrients, including anthocyanins, the pigments that give tart cherries their bright red color. And don't forget about flavor. U.S. Montmorency's unique sour-sweet profile make them an excellent addition to yogurt, oatmeal, salads, trail mix, and of course, a classic cherry pie. Learn more about the wonderfully U.S.-grown Montmorency tart cherry at choosecherries.com.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni. It's a good time to think about supporting the neighborhood groups and community organizations that you believe in. I believe in Heritage Radio Network. It's out there providing podcasts and information about restaurants and chefs and important issues of our time. Check it out, heritageradionetwork.org/donate. So we're with Ben and crew from OEC Brewing in Connecticut. So Ben, you were talking about the lager, the Cool Ship Lager. Let's just go a little more technical. You said it's like a blonde Czech lager. Mm-hmm. So give us the history, give us the traditions, you know, of that. Because I know everyone likes the Cool Ship Lager, mm-hmm. but, you know, if I were going to make this, how would I make it?
You want me to give away all my secrets? No.
A little bit.
So we call it a Czech style blonde lager. You know, Czech style, it's kind of like our interpretation of how we would do it. So it's a little bit different. First of all, it makes it kind of Czech in style because Czech lager should be open fermented. And not a lot of breweries are able to open ferment anymore or choose not to because it's a bit more difficult. But Kulship lager is open fermented. The other thing is, like I said earlier, we have to go through the Kulship. So we don't have a choice. We don't have a whirlpool. So it does go into the Kulship. It goes for the Kulship about an hour and 15 minutes, then goes over the open counterflow cooler right into the open fermenter. Then the open fermentation lasts about 9 days. And then we go down and we lager for an additional 7 weeks.
And then you feel that a good lager has to take some time.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. Interestingly enough, like I was saying, we just came off a big renovation. When we first started brewing lager, we weren't set up at all to do it, but we wanted to start brewing some and have some fun with it. We were really set up as a saison brewery, so it took us a while to figure out how to get our lager brewing down. And so we've made a lot of adjustments. And with this new renovation, we brought in a number of new tanks as well. And I'm really excited also to the changes we've made with it over time. When we first started brewing Kulship lager, we were using German malts, but now it uses traditional Czech style spring barley as malt as well.
You know, when you're talking about open fermenting and the Kulship, which is also open air, do you feel like there's things that you can do in the country setting that brewers can't do in the city? Or do you feel like could a brewer in the city do a Kulship and open fermentation, you know, based on what's in the air and everything else?
I think you could do it in the city. You can definitely do open fermentation in the city. I mean, the problem with the Kulship is it throws off a lot of hot air. So you have to kind of get rid of that, right? So it can give you moisture problems. But I think if you're in a city, you can do it. I mean, look at a brewery like Urge. They're in downtown Düsseldorf, and they have a Kulship.
Well, and I think if I can butt in here, you know, one of the things that I hear a lot from accounts when I talk about Kulship lager is they think that it's sour. And part of that is because OEC is obviously known for their sour beers. But there's also a misconception about the Kulship and open fermentation where people assume that this means that it's sour. And that's not the case. Kulship does not equal sour. You know, it's just a very old type of heat exchanger, really. People obviously equate sour beer with the Kulship because of lambic and that history. But the Kulship used to be the most common heat exchanger historically. But it doesn't mean that the beer is sour.
That's great, George. Gavin, anything to add to that?
Just to, you know, tie on to what George says, yeah, of course, people, you know, see OEC and tend to assume sour. The word Kulship also contributes to that. I think people, you know, who know what a Kulship is are familiar with it via, most often, I would say, Cantillon or Allagash, just because a lot of their media presence kind of circulates around their Kulships and, like, you know, the drama of that brewing step. Also, Ben, I just started drinking the Kulship Black, and it's phenomenal.
Thank you.
Yeah, Ben, it seems that, for me, well, now it's spring, but it seems that Black Lagers, Schwarz beers are the beer of the year.
It's the first time we did it, so I hope it's successful. It's funny because I do feel like black lager is gonna start coming back a bit. It's you haven't seen too many Schwarz beers around anymore, and you know you don't really see too many Czech style black lagers, but It's a really nice style because you get a little bit of that dark beer feel, but it's still very drinkable and very enjoyable. I definitely think it can make a comeback this year.
And George or Michael, so in your Be United portfolio, I know we did a show last year with some Czech lagers. Do you have, you know, black or amber colored lagers
negative.
Coming in from Czech?
We have, no, nothing. In, actually, no, I take it back. We did bring in one dark lager last year from the brewery Hostomice. It was not black, though. It was more like a... I'd call it a Czech dark lager, but I wouldn't put it so far as to say it was in the black department. I don't think they use roasted malt in that recipe. That was all draft bound, though. If you recall from that show, because all those beers were unpasteurized, they were bound for only kegs. They came in that one time last year, the dark one. We brought back the 12 degree Bohemian lager from Unetice. That landed recently, in fact, and now, what with the pandemic, we've been actually doing small canning runs of that beer, just like a few cases per run canning for accounts that are interested and willing to consume in the short term, as it's not a beer that you really want to put on your shelf and leave for weeks or months as it'll start to turn.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about vintage beer. So, Ben... You guys have been showcasing on Instagram that you're selling vintage beers. Is that just because of the COVID crisis and you want to move some inventory, or do you always have vintage beers on sale?
There are two reasons for it. The first reason is that due to our renovation, like towards the end of last year, we're really strapped on inventory. I have almost nothing left. So then the question is, well, what do we do? Oh, we have some vintage beer. So, and the second reason is they age really nicely. And then actually the third reason, there are three, is that yes, the crisis is happening. So we're giving people an opportunity to come and buy them.
So which beers have you focused on aging?
All the ones we age are sours. And we have a pretty decent decent size vintage cellar, but it's actually depleting fairly quickly. So we're going to have to run more vintage this year again.
And then, so are you also selling vintage beers through Be United or just through your brewery directly?
For Be United, we every once in a while do some vintage kegs, especially for special events. But, right now, because of the pandemic, there's no draft business.
Yeah. And at Gavin, you know, when you're at Beer Table, you're a buyer, you know, you're really on top of the retail market. I want you to ask Ben a couple questions. Just pretend, you know, you're a buyer, or you can ask it of George or Michael. Some questions that you as a buyer would be asking about something like the Cool Ship Black Lager.
Oh, man. pricing and format aside, I would probably get into, you know, before tasting it, you know, what beers it was similar to, what the inspiration behind it was, and, I don't know, kind of like shorthand for me to know what my customers should expect. I think that's probably the quickest way without tasting a beer to get into it.
Who wants to take that, George or Michael?
I think I'd defer to Ben on that one. If
Yeah, I can take this one because this is the first batch of it we've done. But the Cool Ship Lager Black it's a cross style-wise between a Czech-style dark lager and a German-style Schwarzbier. So it has some elements of both and kind of runs right in between that line. So you're getting that dark color, almost black from a Schwarzbier, but you're getting a little bit richer character in the middle, a little bit more fruitiness from the Czech style dark, while also still being about 5.3-5.4%, is still very drinkable.
You know, go on.
Yeah,
go,
just
keep going, Kev.
But finally tasting it now, like, you know, yeah, you definitely hit the nail on the head. Definitely like plum through the middle, but like a dry, almost burnt caramel finish with just a touch of bitterness to clean it off. It's just not too heavy on the palate, but also not watery. It's really perfect, especially for for the early spring weather.
You know, this is great, guys. Before we wrap it up, I want to ask one more question of Ben, and anyone else can join in. Also, when you put together the name OEC, the Order of Eccentric, translated to boiler, and you can read about it on your website, OEC Brewing. There's so much to say. But I love that you talked about there's a mysticism of flavor and aroma. And let's end on that. Who wants to go deep on mysticism of flavor and aroma?
That's another tough question, Jimmy.
It's just mysticism's mysticism, right? You can't.
Jimmy, if I can go from like a professional taster's point of view, with little technical expertise, I would say that, you know, you can give any number of brewers same or similar equipment and ingredients and have end results that vary wildly. And I think that kind of, you know, is the magic of beer, is the magic of brewing. And, you know, we've had, to speak to the, you know, the popularity of black lager this year, we've had half a dozen different black lagers from people as, you know, from Munchoff in Germany, Grimm in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, you know, Pipeworks in Chicago, and now I'm trying the OEC. And while they do have their similarities, they're all wildly different and equally satisfying in their own different ways.
No, that's great. I mean, you guys have been really great, and thanks for coming on. And Ben, anything else you want to say before we sign off?
No, I just hope everyone is doing okay through this time. It's, you know, it's not such a nice time right now. But I mean, if I look outside right now, the sun is coming back out, and I think at some point we'll make it through this.
And give us a shout out to your crew. I've seen pictures on Instagram. Tell us who the brewer is. There's some guy with a big beard that's in all the Instagram photos. Who are these people?
Yeah, apparently I hire brewers that can all grow bigger beards than I can, because I can't grow any. So the biggest beard, I think, belongs to Tony. It depends on the day, but that's Tony. He's an assistant brewer, but he is also one of our lead sales guy in Connecticut. Matt is the other one, an assistant brewer. Clark doesn't have a beard, and he's the head blender at the moment.
That's great. Well, thanks so much for joining me. Let's go around one more time. Everyone say their name. So let's start with Ben. Ben, say your full name, please.
Ben Neidhart.
And where are you from?
I'm from Connecticut.
Michael?
Michael Opolensky. And I live in Brooklyn. I work for BU United.
George?
This is George. from New York, and I work for BU United.
Great. And Gavin?
I'm Gavin Murphy. I live in Brooklyn, sequestered in Connecticut, and I work for Beer Table.
You guys have been great. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks so much for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. Big shout out to our producer, Dylan Hoyer, and engineer, Matt Patterson, who are making this happen while we're all remotely. Again, we had people in Connecticut, Brooklyn, and East Village, and Massachusetts, and Rhode Island on the show. So it's amazing work that's been being done. Support heritageradionetwork.org/donate. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, everybody. Woo!
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.